Welcome to my guest this morning, Stuart Marquardt. Stuart, welcome to the program, mate.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be here.
You're the Justice Coordinator of Woodjil Woodjil. Tell us, where is Woodjil Woodjil?
Woodjil Woodjil's approximately about 75 kilometres south of Cooktown and north of Mossman, in amongst the rainforest and the hills.
What's that river run through there?
Freshwater meets the saltwater. It's the Bloomfield River.
Yes. Crocodile country?
It's there. They're there. Quietly but surely.
Yeah, all right. Stuart, tell us about the Justice Group. When was that established and what's its role?
The Justice Group in Woodjil Woodjil and also other Indigenous communities throughout the Cape were established approximately 1992 to 1993. It was established because of the high Indigenous levels of people incarcerated in custody, and its main role was to try and reduce those level of Indigenous people in incarceration. And ever since the also the introduction of the alcohol management plans, they've been a duty of the justice groups to give recommendations, form the plans to the give recommendations to the local councils to reflect the local community on what they'd like to see and how to manage the alcohol management plan.
What's the population of Woodjil Woodjil?
We've got a small population. We've only got about between 350 and 500 people, and that's just in Woodjil Aboriginal Shire. And then we've got a handful of our stations up in the hills and surrounding areas. But yeah, that's predominantly the population of our community.
What's the closest town? Like Woodjil Woodjil seems to be fairly isolated, is it not? What's the closest town?
Closest town? Cooktown would be the closest town, which is about an hour and a half drive. In the wet season, even earlier on this year, we got totally isolated for a couple of weeks. So if the water levels aren't up, well, the roads get chopped up and impassable too.
All right. Okay. Listen, let's come back. We might just talk about, there's been a lot of talk about AMPs and stuff. Come back and just ask you what the situation is with the AMP in Woodjil Woodjil, how it's faring. Like, is it working out the way the government thought it might? Tell us if there's any issues there. And then talk about the meeting. There was a meeting of a number of community justice groups met recently and came up with a number of issues that were common to all of you. My guest, Stuart Marquardt, the Justice Coordinator at Woodjil Woodjil, little town, I think I said southeast of Cairns, southeast of Cooktown. I've been through there only once ever in my life, about a year ago. And a very small community and quite isolated, as you've just heard, an hour and a half to the closest town. So that means if people want to do shop up in a supermarket, that's where they've got to go, Stuart, into
yes.
Cooktown?
No, not necessarily. We do have our food store operating here. But there are some things that you can't buy. And it just depends on what you need to buy.
Yeah, you got the basics. You got the basics
that's
on
right,
hand
yeah.
in the store. But if you want to do big supermarket chop up or that, you've got to go into Cooktown.
Yeah, some things we don't stock here. But we've just been lucky enough to obtain a $50,000-$60,000 grant to update our refrigerator system in our food store. So that's going to be a big help to supplying some good quality tucker.
Fuel, Stuart. What are you paying for fuel at the moment? Fuel's something that's quite common to everybody, no matter where you are in the country. And we're always complaining about how much we're paying down here in the city. How much are you paying for it there?
We're on $1.65 a litre.
All right. That's petrol or diesel? Doesn't matter? Both the same?
Yeah, both the same.
$1.65?
Yeah.
Well, we're paying about $1.30 or so for diesel and I think $1.15, $1.17 something for petrol here. So it's you guys are... Certainly got.
We're on the average, I say.
Yeah,
compared
right.
to NPA, they're paying $3 a litre.
NPA?
I think so.
Cape York?
That's right.
Goodness me. Well, there you go. And it says, obviously, this is a common issue, even for Woodjil Woodjil, the remoteness, the fact that little unemployment in Woodjil Woodjil, the CDP mostly?
Yeah, mostly CDP. We, because the remoteness and the dependency on CDP from a majority of people, not all the people, but, you know, there's a fair emphasis on it.
Some of the mob working on properties around the place, ringers and stuff? Or Woodgill got his own got their own properties there, you say?
No, there's a couple of our stations. We've got a family here who have a self-enterprised family business.
That's the Walkers?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there is a bit of restrictiveness with the economic development here. We've got a small community. We've got to look out with our AMP issues because we are a zero-tolerance community. And we also do have a carriageway that goes right through the community that the government exempted from our AMP recommendation.
Which means that people can travel through your community with grog, but they can't be stopping over in the community?
Yes.
What's it mean?
When you cross the Bloomfield River, there's a main road, deserted road, that goes right through the top part of the community and out through the other side. And that's an exempted road which people can pass through and carriage their alcohol. But what we've found is that creates a loophole in implementing our AMP plan with our local community here. So
people can use that for... What's the loophole there?
Well, we have houses that are banked up against the road.
On the highway there?
On the highway. Mm. You know, a lot of theoretically can come into the scene. So it's making it a bit difficult, but we're identifying and hopefully better improving the management of the AMP in our review at the moment.
All right. Okay. You're meeting then with the community justice groups that met recently. What brought that meeting about? How come how many people come together and what brought that meeting about?
Well, the meeting was a fairly spontaneous meeting. It came about with two coordinators being in the Cairns region at the same time, and opportunity was used to bring together a few of the closer communities, Tablelands, Cairns, Justice Group, Mossman, Innisfail, Woodgill, to come together and identify some of the, because of the transition. At the moment, we've just had a transition of Indigenous Community Justice Groups from the Department of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Policy, commonly known as DATSIP, and it's been transferred to the Department of Justice and Attorney General, and we've identified a series of funding shortfalls which has affected the efficiency of operations of all justice groups across Queensland.
Why do you think that transfer might be there, the responsibility being transferred from DATSIP? Why?
Oh, well, I suppose the Department of Justice and Attorney General is an appropriate department to handle justice groups' issues.
Do you have some hopes, and your group have any hopes of a better deal being done there?
Well, it's not a matter of the better deal. Indigenous policies are getting fairly limited in advocacy voices. DATSIP's one of the only few left. The rest have been disemboweled. ICC is the other one. But collectively, the justice groups don't have an advocacy voice. So we found it necessary to come together, and we do have high hopes because the program is a good program. It was estimated that the services that the state's community justice groups would be the equivalent of the provision of two additional prisons being constructed in Queensland. So that's approximately how many people we keep out of incarceration. ATSI incarceration rates have been a continual concern since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody. And I'm still a little bit unsure on who's monitoring that Royal Commission at the moment. There was a body formed, I think Ajax, I think it was formed, but I don't believe that that's still running. So, yeah. But because of the concerns of, you know, the justice groups and the importance of that they play in the communities, that was why the groups got together and we had to talk about our funding shortfalls, because some of the justice groups, they're putting their hand in their own pocket just to have to pay for tea and coffee for visitors into the community. And with the rising of fuel and like today, I've got to take some Indigenous community residences into Cooktown for district court. And if I didn't take them in, well, there's no public transport to take them in. And the majority of people don't have private vehicles. So it's a very vicious catch-22. And
so if Justice Group wasn't there, Stuart, what would happen? Maybe council might organise them, or what?
Well, council's responsibility is local government.
Not being a taxi driver.
No, well, that's right. Mm. Their main, you know, they're in the, you know, with all the new introductions of legislative changes into AMPs and the Alcohol and Substance Demand Reduction Program, all coupled with the changes to community CDP and a change over to Shire Council status.
That's right. There's that transition. Yes, yes, that's right.
It's all of which is currently being introduced into the majority of state Indigenous communities. There is a recipe for potential disaster, and the legal, local government and social service structures would be under threat of collapse if token funding continues to be applied and any transition being incomplete. So, yeah, there's a lot of concerns.
So the first real issue is then when for the Department of Justice and Attorney Generals is more funding. Appropriate funding?
Well, we're looking to not only fund the actual program, but also adequately fund the Department of Justice and Attorney General in Cairns, who manage the program, properly resource them with resources such as a car to be able to travel to the communities, an administrative worker to be able to take calls while the case management aren't in the office. So we're just looking for a realistic view about funding and adequate funding. Mm. So it's like not just the program is inadequately funded, but the proportion funding within the Department of Justice needs to be looked at too.
So do you think then that the government's not giving it, he's not looking at this overall from the department level down? It's not just in communities, you're saying. It's your Cairns-based departmental offices and responsibilities there.
It could well be, Tiger. You know, from where the money starts from to where the money eventuates, there's a lot of different filtration.
A lot of hands putting their hand out along
right.
the way.
Mm. And if some of that fat was trimmed and more money reached down to the actual program and the where it's supposed to be. I'm not saying that, you know, we need more money, but if it's looked at and done more efficiently, well, perhaps it will reach the program where it's needed.
Now, that's a common problem that's been around for a long, long time.
Absolutely.
Just the Aboriginal Affairs budget alone itself, with over $1 billion for the last 20, 30 years. It hasn't been over $1 billion for 20 or 30 years, but it's been up there. And the bulk of that goes off to fund the bureaucracies and stuff. Very little of it, a percentage of it, a small percentage of it, actually gets down in the community on the ground.
Absolutely. It's a big, big worry.
Mm.
And, you know, it's just ironic. It's just, you can't help but ask for more money.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be, you know, talking like that as a person begging, but it's just being realistic about it. We keep people out of jail. I'd also give you another example is that the agencies, government agencies, such as Department of Communities, Corrective Services, Centrelink, Queensland Education, Queensland Health, Department of Child Safety, and Indigenous Legal Services, etc., you know, perhaps they must pay a fee for service, which would be essential for making up the shortfalls if government can't provide adequate funding towards the program. Because without the justice groups in the communities, these government agencies, the gaps wouldn't just be a mile long, they'd be a couple miles long.
So you're saying that maybe these departments, for the work that the justice group does, should be able to receive some money, may need to say to these departments, we're doing this bit of work for you, that's going to cost you X amount of dollars. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's one
option. That's an option. That's an option. Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently, it's been around in conversation for quite some time.
Mm.
And there is some areas of moral obligation that the justice groups do show, and the local councils. Like my local council, I'm so thankful to have a good council supporting my program and my justice group members. Other communities aren't so lucky. I've just had a council approve my budget, which they've put their hand in their pocket to cover a $30,000 shortfall in my budget, which should have been budgeted from the program. So they can see the need of the program running in the community, and I really hope that the government can see the need for it as well.
Stuart, what were some of the other issues? Funding was a big one at the meeting of justice groups recently. Funding was one of them. What other issues came up?
Unfortunately, the funding stems into a lot of different other areas where it has effects. At the moment, we're training the Justice Department of Justice and Attorney General is supplying training to the Aboriginal Shire communities to train communities, residences to become Justice of the Peace magistrate trained, which means that they can have community courts in the communities, rather than having to go to the town courts, magistrate courts, and having a judge give sentence. Instead of having a judge in the courthouse, this you have two JP Mag trained people who give sentences.
Does this system already, isn't this already happening in some of the communities, like Aracoon and places like that?
Yes. No, it is around the place.
Yeah, so it's nothing new that you're proposed, that's being proposed here. It's just another development.
Well, yeah, it's developing it within this community and other communities that are that don't have it. For instance, Hopewell or Woodall, other communities, maybe Warrabinda.
And the community thinks this is a good thing to have JP trained people to be able to run their own magistrates' courts?
Well, because it empowers the traditional law back to the people, and instead of taking people into the state magistrate's court, where all the revenue that is received from fines and all those sorts of outcomes, with the community courts, all the community bylaws are heard. So any fines that are incurred, it goes back into the community.
Plus, you've also got if you've got community people, they're more in touch with community issues and circumstances and stuff, whereas you go into Cairns. What are the magistrates and people in the district court or the magistrates' court, what do they know about Woodjawoodjaw? As they got people coming into court all the time.
Most of the people go up to Cooktown, and the justice group provide pre-sentence reports and input into the individual people to the magistrates. But what at the moment happens is that Because everyone is going up into Cooktown, say, from Woodall, a lot of the matters can be dealt with here with minor alcohol offences, bylaw offences, and it alleviates the pressure within the courthouse in Cooktown on the court day. So it's not like a mad chook pen when legal representation hasn't received instructions until the day of court. It's just chaos. We sometimes stay in court right up until 7, 8, 9 o'clock. It's been gone up till.
Of an evening?
Of an evening, yes.
My goodness. So, and then you got to drive home.
And then we drive home.
Yeah.
There's a lot of...
So you think there's some streamlining that can take place that can benefit both white collar system, courthouses, and Murray community?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm.
As it is now, the legal services that do the CAPE, they don't come into Woodjawoodjaw prior to the court once a month. When people go in for court on that day, then the legal services receive instructions on how to go about each matter.
That's not an ideal way to be giving people legal advice or legal representation, you think?
Well, it bottlenecks the court system on the day. Mm. There's two different people talking to field officers in the one room. You don't have much confidentiality. And that's why the court goes till a ridiculous time in the evening, because of that bottlenecking. I think the justice groups are going to be meeting with the ATSL's legal services next week or the week after, the board of directors, and to discuss and identify a few areas where it could be streamlined and improved.
Is that an issue for you in your capacity and other justice group coordinators, the fact that you don't, well, do you get to meet very regularly? Is there the option to be meeting and putting your issues together and identifying solutions and lobbying that needs to be done? Do you get to meet very often?
We don't meet as often as we'd like to, and the inability to conduct state gatherings of coordinators or key justice group members to identify and advise on the common problem areas within the justice system, it doesn't happen often enough, and there isn't specific funding within the program for that to happen. So it is a concern.
All right. What about servicing some of the inmates? I mean, if you got community members that may well be sentenced and doing time, it must be difficult. Where would they be serving, and how close to that is community, and how does community maintain contact? Is that an issue for you?
Well, the closest prison up is in Mareeba, Lotus Glen Correctional Centre, and the next one down is Townsville and etc. It is an issue for us to be able to take or to help support families to go and visit their loved ones in jail. And it's not always possible because from here to Mareeba, you're looking at 400 kilometres one way. Other communities further north are further away again. So we look at the video conferencing alternative to try and bridge that gap and make it a bit more realistic with the families. And it's a lot more cost effective too, visiting through video conferencing. Not as personal, of course, but better than nothing. One concern is that some justice groups who, say, for instance, up in the Tablelands where Karanda, they have a lot to do with people who are incarcerated and the need to make sure that things are right, or maybe a pre-sentence report conducted before a court appearance. There's restrictions on the justice group coordinators to go in and talk to those inmates one-on-one with confidentiality, and that's a concern that was raised at our last coordinators meeting, that coordinators need to have clearance to conduct work with inmates of prisons 24/7. It's allowed down in Brisbane, so I think it's just the general manager's discretion from each correctional centre on whether or not that's allowed.
What are some of the things, and has it been discussed, has it been identified, to try and reduce the workload that comes through to the justice group by community members and families taking responsibility for some particular issues? Has that been considered, discussed?
Oh, yes, it's always discussed and identified.
What do you come up with?
Well, you know, whether you're in a remote community or an urban community, the responsibility of parents for children are fairly well generical. You need to send your children to school, pack them some lunch, when they come home from school, do the homework, and then, you know, give them a good may at night time and an early night to sleep, ready for the next day. That's a sequence that we've found that before the AMP came in, that kids were not getting enough sleep, but since then, the children are receiving that sleep. I think if the community as general can take more interaction with community committees, like the justice group, you know, want to be part of the justice group, all the social committees that are forming now because of the transition of Community Service Act over to the Local Government Act, it needs to happen. And that's really can empower the community the most, take a lot of burden off the handful of people who normally take or attend meetings all the time, and they end up getting burnt out by meetings, and the majority of people need to embrace and take a step forward to partake in these these things. But, yeah, sending the kids to school is a really big thing.
Talking about schools, what can the community provide in schooling there? Is it a primary school? Is it high school? What do they get?
We have a primary school here. It's about 8 kilometres out of the community.
And that's a mainstream school, is it, somewhere?
Yeah, it is. It's a state school.
What's it called?
School. It's called the Bloomfield River State School. And, you know, it's always encouraged for parents to come down, sit around with the children just to see what they're doing, support them, maybe help with some language, cultural classes.
How many kids would attend that school? All up, total population.
Oh, you're probably looking at about 100 children, I think.
And that's a mixture of kids, the Indigenous and non-Indigenous?
Yeah, you probably have about 85% Indigenous children there.
Okay. So no high school. They got to go up to where
the
they go.
The closest high school is Cooktown, and that's a day school. But there's no public transport from the community here, so it's never been a used resource.
So you say there hasn't been a high attendance rate of high school for members of that community to go to high school?
Not to Cooktown, no. The majority of the people who go to high school from our community, Woodall, attend boarding school.
What sort of percentage of your last year primary school kids might go on to boarding school, do you think?
Oh, I dare say the majority of them would do.
Okay, yeah, yep. Okay, that's good.
We just had our community police sworn in last week. So we have active community police now, and they're a very muchly appreciated asset to have in the community to help the justice group for school attendance as well as other bylaw issues. And we also have Queensland State Police present in our community since the beginning of this year, and that is also a welcome sight. And hopefully next year we'll be having a police station built within our community, so we've been told.
Are there bylaws that may penalise families for not having children go to school?
Yes. There are monetary penalties for parents whose children don't attend school for a valid reason. But until the community courts start up, those bylaws can't be really implemented.
All right. Now, let's go back to the real crux of the matter, and that is a lack of government funding, a lack of funding coming through to the community group and the local council having to pick up the bill. Like you say, $30,000 a budget shortfall, and the council comes through with that.
Yeah, no, that's right. It has been identified that allocated funding for community justice groups in 2006-2007 financial year are grossly inadequately funded. And as a consequence, workers and justice group members are being left to finance operations from their own mere funds to supply or to supplement a government program. And auspicing bodies and local Aboriginal Shire councils that don't have a rate base to start with should not have to meet the financial shortfalls that are currently being experienced in the state justice group budget.
So you would see that these are generally government responsibilities. And